Welcome to Double Burst, the podcast about Dice Masters. We are a group of Utah players that want to bring you the latest Dice Masters news, strategies, tips, and more. Whether you're a new or seasoned player, we hope this show has something for you. I'm KT Data, one of your hosts, and welcome to episode 20. In this episode, we'll be talking about some productive promos, our hidden gem, and we'll wrap it all up with some storage solutions for your Dice Masters collection. So let's kick it off with a quick update from the Rules Forum.
Okay, guys, so I got Dr. J here, and if you guys listened to our last episode, the WizKids Rules Forum did some rules updates, and you guys can see that at win.wizkids.com/BB, B as in boy. Right after we recorded and before the episode actually published, they posted more rulings.
Yeah, so. Yeah, they're not supposed to release for once every 3 months is their schedule, so...
Yeah,
when it was a week apart, I was really surprised.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is we're going to come back up, give you some of these new rulings, and knowing our luck, we'll be another week behind because they'll put some more rulings up on the
board. I'm okay with that. Yeah. The more rulings, the better.
Yep. Okay, so let's go with our first one. This has kind of been a question, too, is for the cross-post ability, which is you can only use a cross-post ability if you paid this character's purchase cost using only their energy types. People have been wondering if you can use the wild or the question mark on a sidekick die and have their ability work. And WizKids ruled it, yeah, you can use a question mark for that. So,
yep, next.
Our next one is kind of for the pyro global, but it's in terms of rolling... those crossover character dies that have the two dual energy on their energy sides.
Right.
So an example is with the global and pyro, it reads, pay a bolt, draw and roll two die from your bag, keep any bolt results rolled, return the rest of your bag. The question is, if you get a crossover character that, say, has a bolt and a mask and it rolls on that, do you get to keep it or do you have to put it back? They ruled it that you keep it.
Yeah, so as long as you re-roll it and it has... one energy symbol that is the type that it calls for, you get to keep whatever the other one is as well.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. that's a kind of interesting one, but those are kind of our two quick ones that kind of clarify a little bit with some of the new mechanics.
Yep. Yep.
Our third one is actually from the Doctor Strange team pack, and it's about Wong, Faithful Servant. And I think this actually is going to clarify a lot of questions we've kind of had previously for similar abilities.
I think so too.
So Wong, Faithful Servant, it reads, while Wong is active, other sidekick characters get +1 attack and +1 defense. The question was, does the bonus apply to your opponent's sidekick character dice as well? And WizKids replied with a curt and short one, yes.
Yes.
So kind of explain to people why this is actually maybe be a significant ruling.
It's significant because there's a few cards out there that they don't say whether they affect your dice or whether they affect your opponent's dice. Aquaman from Justice League is a good example. He discounts Justice League characters. He doesn't discount your Justice League characters. He discounts Justice League characters when he's in the field. So if we follow the same logic, then that Aquaman would discount it for you and your opponent. So anytime that the card doesn't say... your characters or your opponent's characters, but it just says something vague like Green Lanterns or something like that, that it applies to both universally sides. Across the entire board.
Okay. So keep that in mind that's something I think is a little different than what a lot of people play because it's usually they're focusing on whatever's just on your side.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So for the last one is actually specifically to the front lines basic action card. The question is the timing on when you can play the frontline basic action and when the +3 bonus goes.
So, right.
To paraphrase it, because this one's kind of a really long question, but the question was, if you play the front line in your main step, technically people were interpreting it as, well, my characters have not been blocked yet, so they should get that +3 then. And the way WizKids ruled it is they do not get the +3 until you go to the attack step and all blockers have been declared. So that is how you determine who gets the +3.
Exactly. Don't try to fiddle with the rules and break the game with all kinds of weird stuff. If it says these characters are not blocked, it means your opponent had to have an opportunity or at least a step where he could have blocked characters. Now, if all of your characters were unblockable, you know, technically they still had that opportunity to block. Yeah. They just couldn't. But you have to give them the opportunity before the +3 kicks in.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dr. J., those are kind of just a quick updates. There are actually 10 full rulings on the WizKids forum. So again, if you haven't checked those out, go to win.wizkids.com/BB and check out those 10 rulings. And hopefully if WizKids is doing, you know, questions once a week, we'll have you on next week to do the ones that they're going to be posting this next week.
I've got my fingers crossed. The more, the better.
All right. We'll see you a little bit later in the show.
Sounds good.
Okay, so we have a full house today, guys. So we got Dr. J with me over here, Kenneth, the Brown Messiah, and the KO King. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
You guys are actually going to have a kind of almost a double treat because you're going to have two roundtables segments this time around. And for this one, we'll be talking about productive promos. So cards that you get from organized play that we, you know, are useful in games and the ones that we actually like playing. So who wants to start off?
Okay, so we're just going to straight up discount all the DC ones. We're not going to talk about those because...
Nah, that's a lie. That's a lie.
Oh, sorry. There's 1,000 good alt art promo DC basic or promo cards. There's like one or two good other ones.
Right, yeah. There are very... when it comes to winning the promo war, Marvel definitely has it there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Kenneth, how about you start off with your favorites? Because I'm hoping one of them is one of my favorite ones that you picked.
Well, first off, there's a few different ways that you can get promos. There's winning them, there's participating, and then there's also eBay, promos that you can get from purchasing or from eBay.
Yeah, because I do know that's a question that people ask a lot. It's like, how can I get OP cards if my store is not ordering OP packs? One is starting a community at your store and like making it incentivized. Check our last episode if you want to know how to do that. And the other way is straight out buying them on the secondary market.
Yeah, and it's also important to know that there. A lot of the promos use dice from other characters that you find within the sets, but there are some that you have unique dice, and you always, if you're buying off of eBay, you want to make sure those unique dice come with that card. A few that I've got here, one of the first ones was, or the first buy a starter promo was Minsk and Boo from the first D&D set, and he is a beast. He's well active. Minsk and Boo get an experience token at the end of your turn. If they go to the use pile, remove all their experience tokens, and once per turn, you can remove one of those tokens to force an opposing character to block. That's the best use of experience in the game, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's a monster. Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't count like as an adventurer either. So
yeah,
he has the mechanic of experience.
Yeah.
And he gets really beefy really fast.
Yeah, he can get way quick.
Mm-hmm. And as kind of a follow-up to that one that's just really good, I also wanted to mention Squirrel Girl, another different use of tokens, another promo from buying a starter.
And the first to give tokens for its ability.
Actual, tokens into the game. Well, there was Drizzt.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. But they didn't give you the tokens.
Yeah,
to go
they didn't
with
give you the tokens. The Squirrel Girl. Came
I was really
with
excited.
Sweet little tokens.
I was really excited when this one came out because I was like, finally, it's about time we get some token makers.
Yeah, and what she does is at the end of your turn, add a squirrel counter to the card. During your turn, when you could use a global ability, you may remove a squirrel counter and place a squirrel token that's a 1A and 1D into the field zone, and you can have up to 4 tokens in the field at once. And it comes with a really neat little card with punch out cardboard tokens.
Yep. And quick ruling on that, all those tokens, they just count as tokens, not separate characters.
Yeah, it's just,
in terms of that.
They don't count
different
as
characters.
Dice, so you can't roll them out.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right.
I also like just how they also have names. Those were my favorite thing.
Yeah, that was a nice little flavor win. Mm-hmm.
All right, so now that we've kind of gotten the starter sets, I think the rest are just usually participation prizes or you got to win an OP event to get them.
Yeah.
So who wants to kick off on that?
One of the ones, so for one of the winning ones I have here that I've played around with is the Melinda May. She's a 5-cost bolt.
That was a participation prize.
Was it participation?
Yeah, we flew to Florida.
You didn't have to win anything to get her.
I flew to Florida to win her. Yeah. So apparently I did a lot of things wrong there. Well, okay, so as far as participation goes, Melinda May, she's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. While you have an active shield character die, Melinda May has Iron Will, and she also has a team watch ability. It says deal 1 damage to target character or die, or your target character die or opponent. So she's really, really cool for having shield teams, which there are very few shield agents.
So but I don't think there's even enough to do a full team of 8 or no. There's just barely enough?
There's barely,
I think there's exactly eight.
There's exactly eight of them because
oh, yeah, I forgot about the ones that came in Civil War.
Maria Hill also doubles up, so there are only a total of eight. But she's really, really cool. She's got a good stat line. I've used her to great effect.
It's a fun team.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I've played it. I played the S.H.I.E.L.D. team. It's a lot of fun.
No, it's
used
not. It's dumb.
Well, that's what you say, Dr.
Yeah,
Jake.
I do say that.
Well, I think it's fun. How about that? But she's really cool. I like her a lot. And it's pretty flavorful, the fact that she can deal one damage to target character or player.
And,
you know?
And, like, I love the team watch that gives her the Iron Will. So that's one of those things that I just think brings the whole team together. It's because you need her on the field. So she keeps herself on the field, which I think is great.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I just say it's dumb because I played against Diego and it wasn't enjoyable for me. Because I
definitely
lost
wasn't
hard.
I think it's important to realize, too, the team watch, it doesn't have to be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. If you give Melinda May a different affiliation, let's say you're running villains, if you make her a villain and then start filling characters that are villains, that kicks in the team watch. It doesn't have to be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. That's just the...
It works really well with any of the affiliations that you can gift with a global. The Bat Family. Is there a Superman?
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same
villains.
On the same basic action that you can change them to either a Bat Family character or a Superman friend. Yep. Can I go?
Yep.
I want to talk about this one. This one has a special place in my heart.
And this one, it's a disclaimer. This is one of the ones, if you guys do purchase on the secondary market, make sure you get the die with
it. Yeah, absolutely make sure you get the die with
it. So glad I finally won.
Otherwise, you're going to have to get a Phoenix die and paint it yellow and stuff because it's so hard to find. First of all, yellow is my favorite color, so I love this card. But in the very first organized play event that I played, we had a win a feed here for Age of Ultron, and I did well enough in it that I was able to get some of the... There's so much prize support for that win a feed. Oh, my goodness. There were, like, play mats and the feed and starter packs and this Phoenix Force. And I decided to take the Phoenix Force, and I loved it. And it's a 10 cost. Is it the only 10 cost in the game?
Thanos is 10 cost.
Thanos is 10 cost as well.
I think
that's
right. Two 10 cost Thanos.
Yeah. But this one's ability says, while Phoenix Force is active, each of your opponent's characters deals no more than one damage to you while attacking. And I love playing this in really casual events. We had one up in Bountiful, and the format was you had to, like, they just basically threw out all the ramp cards and said, no ramp, you know, no Professor X, no Superhero Registration Act. You got to get creative. And so I brought Limited Wish and I brought Phoenix Force, and I was playing against someone else who had a dragon team who had the rare half dragon. So he was discounting it. And I put this thing in the field and he was like, I breath weapon you. And I was like, I take one damage and let it through, you know,
yeah.
Your dragons are worthless.
And I know how you say you like in casual. We've all seen it in competitive. And it worked.
Yeah, it worked.
If you can get it out in the field, man, your opponent's just done, man, because his stat line is friggin' insane too. So I love this promo. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
The best thing I've seen to get around that is one of the promos that's sitting in front of the KO King here.
So I have actually three amazing cards that I love, but one is Spider-Man the Amazing. I think that's what Kenneth was talking about. So when Spider-Man attacks, you pay 3 fists to make your opponent lose half his life rounded down.
So dumb.
So brutal.
Such a brutal card.
It has nothing to do with damage, so Phoenix Force does nothing.
Yeah, yeah,
that's right.
And one rules clarification, because if you guys weren't... Because this used to be called the Spider Bomb combo. That replaces his attack. So
No, that's
the Spider Bomb combo.
The one was from
the other one.
One that was in, I believe, a starter.
Yeah, it was in AVX starter.
Okay, yeah. I always get those two mixed up because they have similar abilities.
Yeah, similar abilities, but this one is...
I think the one that got eroded, it only costs 4, and it's a 2-fist to do the thing.
And it says on there before attack. It would be, you know... It would just destroy your opponent.
But this one does, it cuts your opponent's life in half, and it does its attack damage.
Yeah.
But
so it's,
I remember actually playing against you in top 4 for WKO, and our first game, it wrecked me. I just couldn't do anything against it, and I was just like, well, we went into game 3 and got lucky there, but I saw that, and I was like, wow, I probably should get that promo.
Well, and I pair it with what I believe is the best prize support card ever. and Iron Fist.
I would go along with that.
That might be the best promo in the game.
I think so.
It's a really, really good one.
For a participation prize, it was ridiculous.
Sorry.
While Iron Fist is active, reduce damage from opposing character abilities by one. So that's a great card. It's a two cost. It pairs with
the Captain America that reduces all ability damage 2-1. You do Captain America's reduce it 2-1, then Iron Fist reduce it by 1. You take no damage from abilities. Things like your rare Lantern Ring gets shut down hard by that.
Vicious Struggle also gets hurt a lot because it's not like one big bomb of damage is pinged just one after another, and he just like, nope.
So... No, because it's characters' abilities.
Yeah, and even non-ability.
Is it character abilities?
Yes, yep. Character
abilities. So, opposing character abilities.
Does it not count as a character ability?
Nope.
I was really excited to pair him with Black Adam Rare.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Iron Fist Reed's opposing character.
He's not an all-around damage absorber.
So you know I'm a fanboy. My competitive mat is a custom-made Iron Fist mat.
Mm-hmm. It's really awesome looking.
So the other part of this is actually why I played him. We know I like to KO my characters. So the way I did it on my competitive team, I had his second ability, because this is a two cost with two great abilities.
And that second ability is?
When Iron Fist is KO'd, you may move a fist die, not always a character, a fist die, with purchase cost of 5 or more to your from your used pile to your prep area. So what I would do is I would attack with Spider-Man. He would do the damage. My opponent would either take it, or I could blink it back, or it would go through. But what I would want is I'd just get it in the used pile. If my opponent blocked, it doesn't go to the right. So a lot of times they'd let it through. It would go to my used pile. When priority would come to me, I will KO my Iron Fist with Blue Eyes, bring both Spider-Man and Iron Fist to my prep area, re-roll them, and do it again.
Yeah, it was brutal. It was really brutal.
Yep, and I think that was kind of the impetus, too, because you started using that with Fabricate and moving the Clay Golem, right, Clay? Yeah, Clay Golem back over at the same time.
Yeah, so I'm actually looking at something right now with Spider-Man and the Lantern Ring, where Kobold, this Spider-Man and the Lantern Ring, I think I've played against some of you guys, where turn 4, if everything goes right, I'm attacking with 1 or 2 Kobolds, all the fists, Spidey, attack, and figure out timing at that point, which is better. Do I pay the fist first or do I pay the fist second after the ring damage?
Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, you're left with like maybe 3 life.
You're not going to survive really quick that long.
And do you guys remember when that first came out for the first Rainbow Draft weekend? And everybody's like, I'll get maybe 1 or 2. I don't want all 4.
So ridiculous what those things fetch.
I would say
the secondary market.
Yeah, aside from the you know, your full art alternate cards, that probably is the most valuable out of all the other OP
and
cards.
And at our charity event, we gave away 3 of them. One person.
Yep.
So
one person walked away with the 3 Iron Fists. You bringing up that ring though makes me think of the promo that Kenneth ran with his ring.
Yeah, my personal favorite promo is the
I like this one too.
Apocalypse Earth 295. When fielded, reroll all other non-apocalypse characters. That's going to be both yours and your opponent's. And your opponent takes 2 damage for each of his or her dice that rolled energy. So you put him on a ring bolt team, and sure, he might clear your field, but that's just more fuel for the ring when he attacks. And it's scary. When we did our PDCs.
Yeah, our first PDC.
The guy who ended up winning, I used this on him once, and he, in the best of 3, after we cut to top 8, I successfully re-rolled his field, and he took a bunch of damage from it one time. And from then on, anytime that at the start of his turn, or at the start of my turn, he was using Constantine to say, no apocalypse. Apocalypse doesn't get to do stuff. even when I hadn't bought it yet. It was frightening enough that a 7-cost character that I hadn't purchased was what he was dedicating his Constantine to. And it is a 7-cost bolt. It's expensive, but it's one of the 7-costs that is worth building a team around, I think.
I think you found the perfect combo with it, with that ring. It's devastating because you don't care if you reroll the bolts.
Yeah, it just fuels his own attack with the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, super solid. I love that one.
All right, so before we wrap up, do you guys have any other honorable mentions or cards that are still pretty good? Because there's tons of OP cards since they're coming out.
I'd also like to quickly mention just the Scarecrow Legion of Doom. He's just a really, really good defense against like the Bard team. It says while Scarecrow is active, you can't be attacked by characters with an attack of 2 or less.
Can I use that with the other Scarecrow?
I'm sorry, Russ, but you cannot.
Lame. Yeah, speaking of not being able to use more than one of the same character, Kenneth, you got one that always runs into the problem?
There's the Constantine Trinity War that is overshadowed by every other Constantine, even though it is still great. You know, I mean, he's a 2-cost shield, once per turn, one fielded, gain 1 life. That's a really solid life gain mechanic. It's really good, but it just gets overshadowed by the amazing Constantine cards that they've printed in set.
My honorable mention is basically anything out of the D&D sets. I love the way that the D&D sets have done promos, and that is they all have, I mean, for the most part, they have like different abilities, but they have these cool like sketch art cards, you know. Yeah. And so
the legendary.
Yeah, exactly. So like the skeleton, which is the only mask with swarm, it's got cool sketch art skeleton. There's a half dragon. There's a gelatinous cube, a mummy. Mm. I really, really like those cards. Not necessarily for their abilities, but they just look so cool.
Yeah, pretty.
I also wanted to mention that there's also basic action promos. There's a few, especially back from AVX, that I thought were really good. Teamwork is a monster of a card on any single affiliation team.
Very underrated.
Each of your fielded characters gains +1 A, +1 D for each of your other fielded characters with that, or that shares a team affiliation with it. On a single affiliation team, that is huge. You know, rally, collateral damage. There was a bunch from AVX that were really, really good.
I love the rally and the teamwork one because if you put both of them together, it's one picture.
The art even lines up. They also did a few with Justice League, and more recently, in the way of alt arts, they're printing across universe with some of the
like Villainous
promos.
Pact and Thrown Card.
So you can bring something like Villainous Pact if you're doing a Marvel only event. You can now bring it to Marvel if you have that alternate art, which is really cool. I think that's a great way to do promo basic actions.
Yeah.
My honorable mention is actually Beast Nefarious Geneticist. This took me a while to get, but I was really excited when I got it because it's, I don't know if it's competitive, but it's a lot of fun because you can build a team. Because he says when Beast blocks, you may purchase a die with a cost of 2 or lower for free. And then with his burst side, you may purchase a die with a cost of 3 or lower instead. So if you build your team right, which I've done, you let your opponent buy all your characters for you, which is kind of fun. Not, like I said, it's casual, but it's a lot of fun to be purchasing all my characters when my opponent attacks.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and then for our last one, I don't think any of us have actually played this card yet because we're actually, as we record, this is still Rainbow Draft weekend as it's the weekend. And the reason I traveled to 3 stores in 1 day to do 3 Rainbow Drafts, that's insane, but it's Strahd. Diego, what's his ability?
So Strahd has experience. He's a 4-cost bolt character. He has energy drain. So when he's engaged with a character, he can spin down the opposing character. I haven't played it with it too much, so I don't really exactly know how it works.
I think that energy drain could be one of those abilities that
people overlook.
Yeah.
Right. Could be very good if it's on the right characters.
Great with vibe.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so on his on his burst side, which is only his level 3, he says, while Strahd is active, once per turn, when an opposing adventurer takes damage, Strahd immediately gains an experience token. And then it says, Strahd does not count as an adventurer. This text cannot be ignored. So he's got experience, and he's not
that adventurer. Last bit is important because the only qualifier for being an adventurer up to this point was that it had experience.
Exactly.
So it's anything that has experience except for Strahd.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So let us You know, we want to hear from you guys and to know what your guys' favorite OP cards are. Shoot us an email, doubleburst at ktdata.net or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst. We'd love to hear from you, or if you've actually played Strahd.
Yeah, tell us what you're doing with Strahd. We want to know. We haven't had time to play with it yet, yeah. But you can bet we'll be talking about it because this is an interesting card.
Yep.
Agreed.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for talking about some of these productive promos. We'll have everybody back in a little bit to talk about storage. All right, guys, we are back with the Brown Messiah
hey.
Dr. J.
Hello.
I'm excited because the Hidden Gem, it's back for this month. I'm excited about this one, especially this one, because you've probably heard me mention this before. Thematically, this ability for this character is just spot on.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it is just one of the best.
Yeah, so we're talking about Mr. Freeze, Heart of Ice. He's a 5-cost bolt villain, and his ability is, while Mr. Freeze is active, before your opponent's clear and draw step, you may choose a die in their prep area. They skip rolling it this turn, and it remains there.
So cool. This is really, really cool. First of all, Dr. J is the one who turned me on to this card.
Yeah.
So all of you who aren't aware, ask Dr. J about what cool cards are going to work out in the future. Right? Second of all, I looked at this card and I was like, okay, well, this is cool, but it's not going to be really, really easy to like make your opponent want to put stuff in the prep area or anything like that.
Yeah, because my initial idea was like, I'm going to bring Resurrection. Mm-hmm. And most people aren't going to want to resurrect.
Well, aside from that, the only other way was like you could taunt something to either attack or block. You would have to do combat damage to put it in that prep area any other way. But now with the Rip Hunter's chalkboard and the global on that says pay shield, first die you purchase this turn, you go into your prep area. If you bring that, they're never going to want to use that because they're just going to freeze their own character. And then on top of that, I also pair it with the cold gun. Any of the cold guns work with it, but the uncommon or the rare are the ones that I use. I think the rare is the most effective because it deals 3 damage to the character. So they got a Constantine there in the field. Shoot it and it's frozen for the next turn or whatever.
Yeah, I really, really like it. The great thing is he scales well as the game progresses. Mm-hmm. So on the first turn or whatever, your opponent's going to buy something cheap. Then they're going to buy something a little bit more expensive. If you get that Mr. Freeze out early, you freeze that more expensive character. And then if they end up wanting to chalkboard in a 5-cost character, you say, okay, fine, I'll freeze that one and you can have the other one. And he is just, oh, he's so good.
I love him.
Yeah.
He's also really, really amazing against those max one die. The one I'm thinking of specifically is Zombie Magneto, because they only get the one die. And once that die is frozen, it's never coming out.
Yeah, you're like, that's staying there. Like, and then he'll KO some other characters and be like, are you going to pick something else? No.
No.
Z-Mags for the rest of the game. Yeah. Just assume.
So it's always great, you know, when you play against those players that are, I'm going to KO my Scarecrow and take control of your die. You know, I don't know who does that.
Boy, cannot stand those players, but it's so satisfying when you shut down their KOing abilities.
And on top of that, then you force him to spend another 4 energy to buy another Scarecrow.
That's another great thing about him is if it's an expensive character, like say a Gorilla Grodd, and you freeze it in the prep area, you're basically saying if that's your win condition, you have to buy 2 of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really good for that. The issue with him, I think, is just the fact that he is a little squishy. He has a 4/2, 5/3, and 6/4 on all of his faces, so his defense is a little weaker. Yeah, but
not like totally weak.
Yeah,
but it's still prone to getting.
Yeah, you can definitely ping him out on level 1 and level 2. A little harder on level 3, but you still can do. You can still get it away from there. Another thing that I found really good pairing with this is Banishment, the basic action. It's a 2-cost basic action. This says you may move die in your opponent's prep area to their use pile. So anything that you've frozen, you can just move it over. You can freeze up something else next turn. And that's something that they have to cycle through.
Or the die that is not frozen, you just don't want them to reroll it, you can banish that. Mm-hmm. And so you're really jacking with their prep area. Another thing that I really like about him is his timing, because his ability kicks in at the start of your opponent's turn.
Right.
So if on their turn they end up knocking him out somehow and you reroll him and refield him, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You're still freezing the same die that you've been controlling the entire time. So it's easy to keep control of it, even if he gets knocked out once or twice.
In addition to that, also for actions like Prismatic Spray, That's not going to
happen. Yeah, you missed the window.
Yeah, you've missed the timing there for it, so it's not going to work out for you. All in all, I'm loving Freeze. I'm really planning on putting him on a lot of my competitive teams. I've been working on a Villains Retaliation team with him. Like, there's just a lot there that I'm really excited for with him.
Yeah, he's super good.
So I got to ask Diego, because, you know, you and I, we have this thing where we're playing some abilities. We always have to make some weird sound effect. What sound effect do you make for Mr. Freeze?
You have to use the... It has to be some sort of laser.
And you have to do the Arnold Schwarzenegger impression. Yeah. I think that I should chill.
See, that's what I was thinking.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age. Yeah.
And so going back to the card, like, I really feel this is it hits all the right points for me. Mm-hmm. Thematically, his ability is great. I think his cost is perfectly it's balanced for his ability and what he can do. It's not too overpriced and not super ridiculously cheap. And like, I love it, and the die looks kind of pretty cool.
I love his die. His
and it
die
works
so,
so
cool.
Well with the cold gun because mm-hmm. they're very similar in color. And
they're
stuff.
Both translucent. They're both like, they both have blue
they look
inking
like
on them.
Little like, ice cubes. It's awesome.
Now what we have to wait for is Mr. Freeze's gun that works with Captain Cold now. That's what we're waiting for now.
So do you guys have anything else to say about Mr. Freeze before we go? I mean, because this seems like a great team, especially if you're a control player. Even if you're kind of an aggro player and you just need to slow him down by that little half turn, it might actually be a good choice to pick in.
I would say if you're playing him, play the chalkboard because it's going to benefit you and it's a good way of bringing the chalkboard and not benefiting your opponent. Yeah.
Make sure also when you are playing with him, you have some other way to KO their characters, any other active characters, whether it's Millennium Rod, Brother Fights Brother. Obviously, I use Cold Gun. I love it. He doesn't work so well with the taunts because it just can be used against him. But if that's the only way you can go, then you know that's.
I would say bring a damage absorber, like a Ronin or a Golem or something, to try to mitigate the damage that he's taking, so you can keep him in the field.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yep. All right, guys, I'm super excited about this because I love this card. Ever since I saw it, I'm like, ugh, I love it. I don't know why no one plays it, but I love it. So thank you, guys. We'll actually get you guys back in a second for our next segment.
Sounds good.
Okay, we are back with the full crew again. Dr. J, Kenneth, Diego, and Russ over there. We're here to talk to you guys about some storage solutions because we hear this question a lot. If you haven't been playing this game for a long time, you will run into this issue, and that is, what are you going to do with all your dice? How do you keep them organized? How do you do it to put them into teams and stuff? And I think we can probably split this out into two categories. One is team transport, so how you get those dice in your teams made up to tournaments and stuff, and the other one is kind of your long-term bulk.
Yeah, kind storage. Of short-term and long-term storage.
Yeah, mm-hmm. on there. So how about where do you guys want to start out? Should we start out with the team transport?
Sure.
Yeah, let's go with that. Yeah.
I think one of the best things that have come out for team storage, or at least to travel with, is the Zen bins.
I love my Zen bins.
I do too. The Zen bins have been really, really awesome for like when you just have your teams, you set up all your teams, you have your 20 dice, your actions, and then they have layers to them as well, so that you can carry multiple dice and carry multiple teams and so on and so forth.
Yeah, if you're drafting and you know that you're going to run out of room, you can slap an extra layer on there so that you can bring home your draft. Mm-hmm. Or if there's big prizes or whatever.
Yeah, so if you guys haven't seen them, they're kind of made out of a...
It's a molded plastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're the nice part about it is kind of... You actually explain it well, because there's like a top and a bottom, and then you're kind
of...
Yeah,
there's a lid that looks a little bit different. That's the top, and then the bottom it's got a little extra room. That's where I stick my dice bag and my sidekicks and action dice and stuff like that. It's sort of the essential extras that you need. And then I throw a few layers on, kind of depending on what I'm doing. I usually have about three layers between the lid and the base, just, you know, one for a team or two, and then, you know, winnings, trades. I carry all kinds of stuff in my Zen bins. I love them. I got in on the Kickstarter. I am very happy with them.
Yeah, so, and you want to explain why it's not the greatest for your long-term storage?
They stack and they get really, really tall.
Yeah,
it's just it gets kind of ungainly once you start trying to put an entire set into it. Each row of dice holds 10. There's 5 rows per layer, so you can hold a max of 50 dice per layer. I'm sure that you can hold the cards that go, that, you know, the corresponding cards with that. But when you're talking 50 dice per layer and there's an average of like
130 to 140, or yeah, about 130.
It's about 130 each set.
Yeah.
And that's cards that are, you know, then divided by 3, so like 40 plus different dice.
I think it just gets, the numbers just get to be too much.
For a full set of dice, you're talking approximately, if you call it 40 different individual characters and you're talking 4 each, you're talking 120 dice. That's 3.5 layers. So you do that for the, what are we at, 12, 13 sets?
I was going to say, that's just not one set.
Not including the, you know, you're talking 3 layers by 13 sets. You're talking a tower or multiple small towers. Yeah. It's just not great for that.
Yeah.
But I absolutely swear by it for taking it to tournaments.
All right, so other storage solutions. KO King, you got a pretty neat storage solution that you use to bring your teams.
So short term, I have a little Ultimate Guard box that I saw at one of the regional events that I really liked. So I have, it folds out. I just use the 160 card one. And the way I do it is I have so it folds out and there's a tray that you put your dice in. Then there's a tray you can put cards in. And then on the other side, when it folds together, there's a spot to put more cards. So what I do there is I put my trades up in the small side with my dice bag, and then my teams that I'm going to use in the other spot for the cards. Whatever team I'm going to use, and then because I'm a weirdo, I carry the team that's like my go-to have fun team, which is my Black Lantern team. So it's probably not the team that most people take to want to play everywhere, but I have my Black Lantern team and then the team I'm playing at that event. So it carries, you know, 2 teams worth of dice plus a sidekick. So it's not huge, but it's greatly improved how easy it is for me to take stuff to events.
Yeah, and it looks kind of just like an elongated deck box, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really nice.
I believe it's a deck box made for the commander decks, right?
Yeah.
For the 100-card commander decks from Magic the Gathering.
So like I said, it's from Ultimate Guard, and they have different versions, but you know, it's 30
Ultra
bucks.
Pro
it's
also
nice.
Makes one,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, and we're not even going to talk.
What? Oh, come on! You can't just discount.
We're saving you for the long term storage because it's probably the one in
no,
the
no,
same.
No.
Yes, it's one in
okay,
the same.
Okay, so my team transport idea. This is how I do it. All right, if I'm going to an event, I make my team at home. I put the cards and the dice and my sidekick dice and my action dice and my life counter in the dice bag, and then I bring my mat, and then when I get there, I dump it all on the mat, and I do that. Like, is it that hard? Like, I don't...
I think your long-term one is the one we're really really getting beef.
I mean, you don't need like a team transport idea. You stick it in the bag and you go.
No,
as far as I'm concerned,
it's definitely a luxury. I bought it for myself my birthday. It's a luxury. Yeah. It's not needed.
Yeah, and every once in a while, like I have a box that is just dice that I glued together and has a lid. And sometimes I'll put my team in that and I'll bring that.
Mm. Yeah, as far as the luxury items, I've gone and taken that to another degree where I have a whole backpack dedicated to Dice Masters.
And
I have
one of the ones that we didn't mention is because we always talk about card and dice storage, but I think people are missing out if they don't have a tube for their playmat.
Oh, yeah. I've got in my backpack, I've got like 4 tubes with playmats in them because I play with my wife and kids, and it's nice to have extra stuff. Sometimes someone needs to borrow something. I've got a pocket full of a bunch of different dice bags. I've got some life counters. I've got every rule book. I've got my Zen bins. I throw everything in a backpack. My backpack is just ready to go.
Do you just leave that by the door just in case your house is on fire?
Pretty much, it's right there next to my PlayStation. I get the important things, my PlayStation, my Dice Master's backpack, and I'm good to go.
That's great. And so there's actually one solution, and you may be able to explain this a little bit better because Ben actually has a solution.
Yeah.
It's, do you know the name of it?
I have no idea. It's like this little
plastic,
plastic.
It's a cylinder type thing.
No one can see your hand. against Dr.
Oh,
J.
Oh, yeah. That. Okay, yeah, so he's got the cylinder thing that he carries around, and he just, like, wraps his mat around it, and it was some Kickstarter project.
Yeah, it was a Kickstarter project.
I was wondering
about that.
What's
cool about it is the cylinder, it opens in half, and in the center of the cylinder is holding all your cards and dice, and that's how he actually transports it. I don't remember the name of it.
Yeah. But it originally came with a play mat, not for Dice Masters, but for something else, with magnets on it, and the magnets stick to the outside of the cylinder. So you just get some, like, magnets and stick it on your mat, and then you can just carry the whole thing that way. I was thinking he used to have, like, a little plastic, like, rectangular thing that was
Dr.
just
J
big
is
enough
now
to,
holding up his hands sorry. In a rectangular shape.
It was just big enough for your cards and 20 dice and your sidekicks and stuff, and it was, like, the perfect size for team transport, but we'll put those in the show notes when we figure it out.
Yeah, I'm going to ask him for the name of the thing, and we'll put it all in the show notes. All right, so we've kind of talked about our team transport. How about our long-term solutions?
Whatever Dr. J does, do something different, because that is just weird.
I
feel like we need to start at one end of the spectrum and move to the other.
Let's start out with the proper end of the spectrum.
The proper end of the spectrum. So what I do is I've got I like the Ultra Pro. The Ultra Pro binders. I have the nine pocket ones.
Yeah, I love the nine pocket ones.
For each set, I put one set in the front, and then I'll put another set after. There's sort of a natural spacing.
There's enough room to hold two sets in each of them.
And you've got plenty of extra room for any OP kits to come out, stuff like that. I also use a separate one of the four pocket style of the Ultra Pro binder for my basic actions, so I can just drop them into my backpack for any sort of draft, and I have all of my basic actions available to
me. And one of the things I like about the Ultra Pro ones, they're side loading, because I've actually had top loading ones before, and if the cards aren't sleeved or anything, say you accidentally tip it, I've had cards just tip out of the top of the sleeves.
They'll just
the sleeves
spill
before,
out everywhere.
And that's not fun.
I use the three ring binder with the pages. That's kind of what I've been using around. I don't carry around or anything.
I think that if you're getting into this game, you need to have basically a binder with some nine pockets in it so that you can keep your cards organized. Otherwise, you're just going to be like, my Civil War set is not organized yet. And it drives me crazy when
I'm because you're just like shuffling through. Where is this?
When I very first started, I used a couple of oversized plastic, you know, pretty basic deck boxes, and I would drop a set into one of the oversized deck boxes, one of the, again, like a commander style one. So that worked. I just sort of outgrew it, and I got into the game enough that I was willing to spend the money and get something that worked better for me long term.
Yeah.
So I use the cards and then, or the binder, like Brown Messiah, but the way I do the organizing is I go across, and I know other people don't, but I number the common, and then I have all three characters along the way. Mm-hmm. So when I'm team building, I can look at like one character and all their rarities.
Yeah, so. I go alphabetical, and then
I go by the card number.
Yeah, I go basically alphabetical through the commons, and then I slot in the uncommon or rare, or if there's multiples for the starter, I slot them in and just sort of go in a row.
I separate the rarities myself. Yeah, I do the commons first and how they're all alphabetical, and then I do the uncommons, and then I do the rares.
You're doing it similar to me, because that's literally the card. If you look in the top right corner, the numbers, that's actually how they're organized. Numbered. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like to just look at them where I can see, like, oh, these are all my Felicity Smokes.
Yeah.
And I decide which one I want to use.
Yeah, and this actually may be a good discussion for a different subject for a different time. But what I do is I don't do my team construction looking at the cards. I do it online in a search engine, and then I go find
them. Yeah, I do it on the Transition Zone app.
Same with me.
I tend to do a little bit of both. It depends. If I'm at work on my lunch break, I'm using the Transition Zone. But I do like the tactile exercise of actually looking through the cards, flipping through the binder, and having all the different versions right next to each other.
Yeah. So the cards, that's the easy part. There have been card games from the beginning of time so that's easy. Now the hard part is about how you organize the dice. I think probably one of the most common ones is using those Plano boxes, and they come in all shapes and sizes.
I use some pretty sweet bead boxes that I like that I get from Walmart. They're like $5 each. They have, I believe it's 8x8 little slots in it. So I end up doubling. I'd use one of those per set. Each slot holds 9 dice. I end up doubling up on a couple of them. It's important to me that they hold that many because I have at least 2 play sets of every die, one for me and one for my wife. If we both want to play the same character, I need 8 dice. So each one of those things holding two layers of 9 dice, they hold 18 in each slot, is really important for me. And you end up at times doubling up on some of the characters in one set, but I can put a full set in one of those boxes, 2 sets into a binder, and I know right where everything is.
Yep.
In general, I think bead boxes.
Yeah.
The clear bead box is the way to go wherever you get them. Mm-hmm. A craft store, Hobby Lobby. I found a little like carrying case for smaller versions.
Yeah, and so you can find those at Harbor Freight
Freight.
And they're designed to hold like nuts and bolts and stuff, but they work really
well. Yeah, so
well
I use them and I can pull them out and I carry those if we're team building and maybe we're playing somewhere, I'll throw in dice I need for those teams and put the cards in. And each one of my little boxes holds a team, like a full set. Mm-hmm. And then I have my runover boxes, my you know, super rare, like dice that come with only super rare, like a Z-Mags, those kind of things. And then every at least one month or so, I don't know if you guys have to do this too, I have to go back and make sure everything's where it needs to be, because I go through and I'm always team building and then I end up getting this organize mess. Stuff.
Yeah.
I tend to put everything back after each tournament.
Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah. You're nice and clean.
So that's actually why I like my bead boxes, because it's the exact height of the die and each of the containers could hold 4 of the die. So instead of like just putting everything back, I can actually just pick up a box and I can see which is missing die and I can put them back if I need to. Yeah.
You could just totally give up on being organized at all and go Dr. J's route.
One more thing.
It's the only way to go.
Hey, one more thing.
He's not the only one.
No, he's not.
One more thing about the bead boxes. If you're buying bead boxes, I would really recommend buying ones that have some sort of an angle or a slope to them. Yeah. If you buy ones that are flat, you'll find yourself trying to pick them out. And especially if you're unfortunate enough to buy ones that fit perfectly, then you can't get your finger behind it. You can't get your, you know,
good luck getting them out.
You're trying to pry something out of something that fits perfectly. So be sure to look at the base of it. Make sure you've got a little bit of room to get them out.
I'm pretty sure.
Fought dice out of bead boxes more than once.
That's how mine is, and I either have a pen or a little pocket knife at times if I need to.
I'm pretty sure that's the reason why I went to Dr. J's style.
Dr. J has pulled Alex over to your way.
Alex pulled me over. This was Alex's idea. I will completely give him credit for it. So my frustration with the bead boxes was, first of all, like, I didn't collect the entire sets, you know, when I first got into the game. I didn't collect all of Age of Ultron. So I had a bead box and I didn't feel right dedicating an entire bead box to half a set of Age of Ultron. So I put all of my Marvel stuff into one bead box, you know, everything from Age of Ultron and everything from Uncanny X-Men and like my 5 dice from Spider-Man, I put them inside the bead box. And then I did the same thing with DC. I did put War of Light and I started putting World's Finest in there. I had a whole Yu-Gi-Oh set and I had my 2 D&D sets together. And getting them back in the box was so frustrating, because I'd be like, okay, I pulled out all 4 of my kobolds. Now, where do they go? Let's see. Limited Wish. They come before Limited Wish. They come after this. And I just throw them in the box. And I just give up and I just throw them in the box. And then Alex was like, I'm so sick of dealing with these bead boxes. So I just put everything in Ziploc bags. And I was like, you know something? That is the way to go.
Right?
It's genius. Like, I love it. Okay, so what I do is I have one bag for each set, and I write on it what it is, and then I, even with a Sharpie, I write on which dice I'm missing from that set on it. So, like, if I'm missing 3 Spider-Woman dice, I'll put Spider-Woman 3, and then and I just keep track of it that way. I love it. It's changed the way that I look at Dice Masters. And I can bring all of my dice with me when I come to an event.
Knowing that he's going to drive most of us insane as he's his team together.
My issue when I come to an event is lots of times I don't have the time to put my team together before I come. So I just bring my whole bag of stuff. And when I had the bead boxes, it was a really heavy bag. Now, like, everything fits into a box. It's a gravity feed box, actually, that I put all my bags in. And I love it. I mean, fishing the dice out of the bag is not hard. It's not hard to pick out what dice you're missing. And I know you guys are like cringing over here, like, what are you doing?
I don't worry about
it. It's because I don't have them, they're like sweating bullets thinking about it. I don't have the type A personality that they have where everything has to be in its proper place. I'm like, I could care less. I couldn't care less.
It's not necessarily about like the transport, because you do transport fine. I'm thinking of in my office on my shelf where I have everything organized nice and like if I had a bunch of bags, too many kids, all of my
stuff is in a duffel bag, and when I go home, I just drop the duffel bag on the floor next to the door. And then when I leave the next day to go to another Dice Masters event, I pick up the duffel bag and put it in the car. Like, I don't need shelves with drawers and all this stuff to organize.
Can I say that duffel bag is like a work hazard? I've tried picking it up before because I needed to move it, and I swear my back was going to give out.
I'm actually looking for a duffel bag right now because I switched to a duffel bag, but it's not big enough, so I need another one. What have the three of you done?
You might be better off with like one of those wheelie suitcases.
I was thinking too.
That's the way to go.
I'm excited to see who comes up with the budget version of that and just brings their dice in grocery bags. just embrace the savage chaos of
throwing your dice
in Ziploc bags.
Someday I'm just going to dump all my stuff into a giant garbage bag and sling it over my shoulder and bring it. This is the way.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for talking about this.
You will have to find something for storage though. I think that's what it comes down to. Find what works for you.
Yeah. So, definitely find what works for you.
So quick tips. We'll have some of these listed in our show notes, but if you haven't yet, make sure you go check out the Dice Masters FAQ that we put together at faq.doubleburst.com. There's actually a question that lists some examples and links to different places that you can actually get it on there. So that's the best part. And we want to know your guys' storage solutions too. There may be something that we haven't seen before that would be great.
Yeah, maybe you FedEx your stuff to the store before you get there. Who knows?
Yeah. And you know, let us know if you think Dr. J and Alex and Diego are wrong, because I think they're wrong.
They are.
Something that goes...
Maybe you could let us know if we're right.
Yeah, I mean, they're just not. I think, you know, I think
something that goes along with this though is goes to help build the community, because storage becomes an issue. None of us like to bring our extras home, and I think our community is pretty good at just as soon as we open stuff that we have, it either gets donated to the new kid box or players. I mean, there's no reason to take extras home. For me, it's not worth that quarter. I'll give it to the new players.
My duffel bag has a pocket that is filled with extra cards and dice, and I just keep adding to it, and the bag's getting pretty heavy at this point. So I need somebody to unload it on.
Yep. All right, guys. So let us know. Doubleburst@ktdata.net or on Facebook, facebook.com/doubleburst. And I will see all of you guys next episode.
And that's it for this episode of Double Burst Podcast. We want to hear from you guys. How do you guys store your dice? Or did we miss out on our promo card you love? You can always shoot us an email, doubleburst@ktdata.net, or leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/doubleburst. Of course, always check out doubleburst.com for our past episodes, places to subscribe, and some pretty cool articles. Brown Messiah just put up one about Board Clear. Big thanks for Game Haven Sandy for giving us a place to record. If you guys live in Utah, make sure you check them out. If not, check out their website at yourgamehaven.com. They have an amazing single store. Big thanks for you guys to listening. Everybody at the team appreciates that. We love you. And until next time, my friends, may your rolls be ever in your favor.